It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox. Welcome to this episode of Kennedy Saves the World. We have reached the mountaintop. Finally, a happy hour guest that I don't know if you have an equal. This is so exciting. I've been wanting to get you on happy hour for so long. Martha McCallum, welcome to happy hour on Kennedy Saves the World.
Wow, what a kind intro. I am so excited to be with you. You know, I'm a huge fan of your work and of you personally, Kennedy. And gee, I hope I can live up to that. And I love happy hour, by the way. Always love happy hour. It's always 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
So I thought about you and I was like, I bet Martha would love a nice spring sangria because we're officially in spring. Sometimes, especially when you're having a lovely mocktail, you like to move it along into the season where you'd really like to be in the middle of. Sangria, of course, can be enjoyed poolside in the summer, but it is such a nice, light spring beverage. So if we were making this with alcohol, we would use Sauvignon Blanc, a little bit of peach schnapps, peach juice, quarter cup of dark rum and some Grand Marnier with a little bit of ginger liqueur.
So what's left when it's non-alcoholic, Kennedy?
Fresca. There's some Fresca in there. And there are a few different kinds of fruits. It's mostly peach, but you also have mango, pineapple, and strawberry.
That's amazing.
So, and then I make them in a giant pitcher, and then I got these little bottles on Amazon.
So cute.
So you can.
This is beautiful.
Gorgeousity.
Oh, I love this. This is so exciting.
Cheers to
you, Martha. Cheers, my girl.
Yes.
Awesome. Happy spring.
Happy spring.
Lovely. That is delicious. There's something about sangria. I had it in Spain once, and it was so amazing and so sweet that it gave me like a wicked hangover because it was
the
so
sugary.
Yes. But it was so delicious. And I had it, my family was there with this enormous, I've never seen anything like it. It was like this enormous copper skillet full of paella.
Oh, yeah.
And they would just like scoop it out onto everyone's plate. It was honestly one of the best dining experiences of my life. So that's what I associate sangria with.
That's nice. And I love when something can remind you of a great travel experience. And, you know, I love travel. It's really important to me. And, you know, I like kind of planning out my year in advance so I have things to look forward to throughout
the
year.
Have
you always traveled with your kids?
You know what? We have always taken them places. When they were little, we took them to Normandy. We walked the beach with them in Normandy. We met a World War II veteran who was there with his daughter, and he was returning for the very first time. And I used to have them, I would give them those little black and white composition books like we used to have in school, and just encourage them to tape in little postcards or, you know, little things from restaurants we went to and write notes in there. And it really was so fun because at night when we would get back to the hotel, I would just say, oh, you know, not a big deal. Like just take 10 minutes or whatever and write about what you saw today. So those were really amazing experiences. We did that in Italy and in England and in France with them when they were little. And now they all love to travel, which is great. I like to combine history with travel. I'm sort of an adventure, more tourism adventure traveler.
Yes. And do you have any kids who are like, Mom, can we just go to the beach? My friends are all in the Bahamas.
You know, I mean, we did a little bit of that for sure. It's always nice to get some R&R and relax. But I try to find a balance of it. I love the ocean. I love the beach and I love the water, but I'm not really big on just sitting on the beach for long periods of time. Like I could do it for an hour if I have my needlepoint that I pick up like once every 3 months and bring to the beach. I can sit there for maybe an hour and a half.
Yeah. No, I have to be swimming or surfing.
Same.
If I'm at the beach, I have to be doing something.
I agree.
Yeah. And I respect people who it's almost meditative
really
for them.
Chill.
Like they have to go and unplug. Yeah. But yes, when you go somewhere and it's a meaningful experience, that stays with you forever.
Absolutely.
I really think it's one of the greatest gifts you can give your kids.
Agree.
And what a nice thing for parents who are listening, you know, taking a composition journal with their kids and like it's sort of like a rough scrapbook.
It is. And you just do it right away. So, grab a postcard, grab a, something like I said from a hotel or something. And it, I'm glad they have them. I mean, they only did it maybe 3 or 4 times, but they were nice keepsakes.
How long have you been covering political coverage and presidential elections for Fox?
Wow. So, I've been at Fox for 20 years and I started in 2004. And started with that first election that year. And I remember saying, just throw me in anywhere. I will sort of track how many cars are coming into the Democratic National Convention from the bridge in Boston. Like, I don't need a fancy assignment. Just give me whatever. And I was really fortunate because I ended up reporting from the floor of the convention that first year in 04 in Boston. And it was really an amazing experience. I remember just thinking, I cannot believe I'm doing this. I had covered business news and finance for a long time in print first and then at CNBC after that. But my love was always politics and history. Mm-hmm. So that was my way in the door through financial news. And I learned a ton and I really loved it. I worked on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange for a long time, made a lot of good friends.
So you like feeling the pulse of whatever it is you're covering.
I definitely do. It makes such a difference when you get out from, behind the desk. And I started as a reporter, so that is very natural to me. And, when you're anchoring, you do find yourself in the studio a lot more. Yeah. But I always relish those experiences. And I'm really looking forward to this summer because we'll be in Milwaukee, we'll be in Chicago, back to my roots of covering the conventions.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere. More Kennedy Saves the World right after this.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
So I have two questions about that. One, when you first started covering this in 2004, did you ever think presidential politics? Because it felt crazy in 04. Because yes. After the contested 2000 election, mm-hmm. it felt really unstable and we were at war.
That's right.
So when you're thinking of your life, if you went back in time and told yourself how crazy presidential politics would be, would you have believed it?
No is the short answer to that. I do feel that with each election, it has become progressively more fraught. And I remember in that year, in 04, some of the more seasoned political reporters were concerned about, it was just after, not too long after 9/11. So there was a lot of concern about potential terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. That year connected to the election.
Yeah, anytime you had a concentration of powerful bodies
absolutely.
In one place.
And we were all seeing security, the likes of which we had never experienced before. So getting in and out of, when you cover a convention, you've got a bunch of trailers basically outside mm-hmm. and your workspaces and all of that. But getting in and out, we had to allot probably 45 minutes just to get through the magnetometers, to get into the workspaces. And once you got in that year, and it's still like this pretty much,
you don't leave.
You couldn't leave because you're, and so I remember being there. I was on in the early in the morning to do hits on Fox and Friends and till midnight. And in those days, I think the conventions were 5 days. They've kind of slimmed them down to 4-ish these days, but they were all day affairs that went late into the evening. And of course, at that, even still, I never wanted to say no to anything. Oh, sure, I'll do a hit at midnight and then another one at, 6 a.m. So it was an intense time, but I have great memories of
all
those
years. Yeah, and you're
like,
I'll have my whole life to sleep. I can do this for 5 days, especially after you've had
I remember chatting
kids.
With you actually for the first time when you joined Fox at one of those conventions.
Yeah, 2012.
I remember it really well. We were sitting on the edge of like a, where they set up the cameras and we were talking about MTV and all of that great stuff. So that was fun.
Yeah. And the first convention I went to was when I was at MTV in 1996. And they asked me to speak at the youth convention on the floor during the day. And it was really cool to see
great.
Something like that and
fantastic.
To be a part of it. And, now I really feel like you and Brett are not just reporting. You have to give people a sense of calm because there is so much chaos and so uncertainty. Is that a different kind of responsibility as a broadcaster than you've had in the past?
It is. I mean, news has changed so much. People are very inside of different silos, essentially.
For sure.
And I think that we both feel the responsibility to sort of keep an even keel on things, to report the news as we see it. And, sometimes that ticks off people on all sides of the fence,
yeah.
But that's
they're like, you're a never Trumper. You're pro Biden.
I'm like, actually, I'm a reporter.
You're a Trumper.
Exactly.
You love Donald Trump so much. He's a Nazi.
I know. I've always found that when I get equal criticism on both sides, I'm probably in the right place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think people who don't understand Fox think, you know, that everybody's in one category. And people who are, you know, Trump supporters, very, very deep Trump supporters, for them, nobody is Trumpy enough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we walk that line. It's just our job, you know? I mean, that's the way I look at it. I'm always kind of astonished when I see something on Twitter or social media. Oh, you think this, you think, you know what? And, you know, I'm a human being. So you're, I mean, it's not, I'm not going to say that there are never times when people can't pick up on my feeling about something, but I always try to ground it in, you know, can I back this up? Does this make sense? Is this a logical assessment based on what's going on, right? You know, for instance, it's easy to say, oh, well, crime stats are down in these three categories. But yet it's also, I think, a fair assessment to say, but people feel very unsafe.
Yes. And they aren't as safe as they were before the pandemic. In 2019, like, there is a big difference in the number of police you see and the frequency of unwell people. And you don't know if they pose a threat to you. So what was your a moment where you felt unsafe and how did you overcome it? Either as a reporter or as a person working in New York City.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think that feeling for me goes, it rooted in September 11th initially, covering that story. You know, we lost several people in my town, in my hometown in New Jersey, and certainly sources and people that I worked with at CNBC who were down in that area that day who we lost. So I think that really, it really set me on a sort of different course in terms of my understanding of national security and also of patriotism and my love for the country. Mm-hmm. So that was a formative experience for all of us, to be sure. And then you kind of move up to, I think, the next most formative in that regard, in terms of being really rocking everyone's sense of safety, was the pandemic. And what I didn't understand about the pandemic initially, I was clearly one of those people who thought, oh, we're going to, you know, sort of lock down for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And well, this will be great. The wave will reorganize be my
It'll
closet.
Be fine. Exactly.
Make some overnight oats.
Oh, I remember them coming over into my office and saying, you know, we want to set up something at your house just in case you need to broadcast from there. And I literally laughed. I thought, you're kidding me, right? We're not really going to all move out of the building and be in our basements. But I did that for a short period of time. I was one of the first people to come back because I didn't like being in my basement. And I love the balance of work and life. I like to be at work in my office, working with all the people I love and work with and respect. And then I like to be home. I don't really like to blend the two things. I know it's popular with a lot of people, but you know, I would say noticing tent cities growing in the cities that I was working in DC or in New York and feeling this sort of almost, you know, Gotham kind of feeling creep into the city during COVID when it was so quiet.
Yes.
And it was dirty. And you felt like there was just a real sense of randomness and that you were kind of on your own.
Yes.
And that was very unsettling. And I think that what we've seen happen at the border has added to that deep sense of unsettling. You know, you sort of feel like, I mean, I had Pete Hegseth on the show yesterday and we were talking about the migrant situation in New York that is connected to this squatter Bronx story that we're covering right now. And he was like, what country are we living in?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like the same place.
It doesn't.
Because what we knew as black and white and right and wrong and good and bad, mm-hmm. it's no longer that. There are so many boundaries personally and politically and even physical boundaries that have evaporated. And it's really hard to know. You know where you stand as a person. Like, you know where you stand as someone who loves this country and wants to raise a good family who then go on to be successful and loving in their own right. But you don't know where other people stand, particularly people in power in this country. And that's what's so unsettling, because it used to be, okay, the person in charge, like, you know, they're going to take care of us. They have our best interest at heart. I don't have to worry. And now it's like, you have to watch everybody, which makes the news more important than ever. Last question. What was your first job?
My first real job or just paycheck? Yeah. My first paycheck, I worked in a cheese shop.
Yeah.
You know, cutting cheese into cubes for catering platters.
Nice.
And also the best part was that I got to cut like these enormous wheels of Emmentaler would come in.
Beautiful. From,
and I got to like, you put a wedge in the edge of one of them and then the top with a knife, and then you put the wire through it, and then you have to
cut
the whole thing in half. You have to put your foot up on the counter basically and haul it all the way through to open it up and then cut it into all sorts of pieces and weigh them and put stickers on them to see how much they cost.
See, that's amazing.
That was a great
but
job.
What did that teach you?
Well, it taught me a lot about food. I gained about 10 pounds when I worked at the cheese shop.
I would get paid in cheese. I wouldn't even mind.
I also worked at the cheese shop where they invented the bagel chip, because we had all these old bagels sitting around, like day-old bagels, and came up with this idea to slice them. It wasn't my idea. Slice them and butter and salt them and put them in the oven. And they started selling like crazy. And then the people who owned the shop ended up selling the shop and going into the bagel chip business, which they then sold for millions of dollars.
I love this country.
The invention of the bagel chip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Necessity is the mother of invention. And you see that, like, we need to do something with these old bagels.
Exactly. We can't throw them out.
And they did it and made something delicious and changed the world for the better. Thank you so much for coming by and sipping sangria.
You made something delicious and changed the world for better today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers again, my friend.
Cheers.
Great to be with you.
Martha McCallum, here and beyond. This has been Kennedy Saves the World, along with Martha. I'm Kennedy.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. Oh, go ahead and leave me a review while you're there. I'd love to hear what you have to say. You've been listening to Kennedy Saves the World on the Fox News Podcast Network.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.